two, three into the things.
So yesterday we bought a new car for the family. It is it is a, you know, very bougie middle class American thing to do, to buy a family car. We bought the we bought a Japanese car, but still seems very American. We bought a Honda CRV, you know, our first SUV, which is sad, and but really the only way to go when you have two children in tow. But for some reason, I've always seemed to have a car, and I grew up in Maine, so needed a car there, but otherwise, no real need for a car, but had one for whatever reason. And this is the first car I am completely unenthused about owning, but I just wanted to sort of talk about cars and the cars I've owned and cars you guys have owned and the nostalgia of cars and whatever. As I was saying, we bought a Honda, and we're at the dealership, and they had like a display of this awesome little mini dirt bike that Honda had made in the 70s, and a old like late 70s Honda Civic.
You're talking about, by the way, with the dirt bike, you're talking about the monkey bike, the tiny little one with the, it's like, yeah, this tiny, tiny donut wheels. Yeah, I've got one in my garage. You should come over
really?
And ride it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Called a monkey bike. That's what they were nicknamed.
But yeah, the Honda Civic was actually the first car I owned. It was like a sort of gold, metallic, sparkly, probably early 80s Honda Civic, tiny stick shift. I owned it for a day, and then realized that there was fumes coming in from the floor. There was like a hole in the floor, and realized the whole floor was like rotted out. And it must have been earlier than 80. It must have been a 70s car, because this was mid 80s. So anyway, so that was my first car. I really liked that car for the minute I had it. And then after that, my grandfather gave me his Caprice Classic, which I loved. I had that all through high school. And if you don't know those cars, they're, this was a 70s one. It was giant. And
yeah.
Had, like, the shocks were crazy. Like, you just hit a bump and it would bounce for like a whole block, you know? Actually, I'm missing a car there. I think I did have like a Dodge Dart for a minute too. And that was like another weird issue. I can't remember what happened with that car. And then after I left Maine, I didn't need a car in Boston at college. But somehow, when I was dating this girl, Heather, her parents or some relative gave her a Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme from the 70s, which was amazing. Total muscle car. And that didn't last very long. Like the like, what is it called? The basically like the metal that holds the car together at the bottom.
You mean the metal?
Yeah. The sort of the framework basically like cracked or something. The whatever that's called. At one point I was driving and all of a sudden the front
just split in half.
Like, basically, yeah. The front wheel just like crushed. Like fell so that it was turning and it was a mess. So that car didn't last very long. Then moved to New York. I didn't have a car for a long time. Moved to New York, and my grandfather had bought another Caprice, Chevy Caprice Classic, and he didn't need his other one. He just kept buying those cars. He bought his third one and gave me his second one. So you guys remember that car at Exile.
Yeah.
Giant car, which was amazing as well. And then I moved back to Maine for a little while and got a Mitsubishi Diamante, which was an awesome little station wagon. And then moved out to Kalamazoo, had that station wagon for a while, and then Nalco got a Volkswagen, a new Volkswagen, a Bug. It was a new Volkswagen Rabbit, and then totaled it. And with the money from the getting it from totaling it from the insurance, we bought a Jetta wagon, a used Jetta wagon, and we've had that forever for like.
I remember that car.
Years.
Yeah, it's got the wood paneling.
No, that was her other car. The Jetta wagon is just like a black Volkswagen wagon.
I do remember that now.
But she did have an old, I think it was Oldsmobile. It was the wood paneling.
It was white with like wood paneling along the side.
Yeah, white with wood paneling. Is it also, what kind of car is that?
I remember that from when we were recording that when I was in Kalamazoo for that 1 month, you know?
Yeah.
I think you were driving that around.
Yeah, that car is awesome. Giant.
Yeah.
So big.
Yeah.
Is this, I can't remember in your litany of cars, is this the first really super new car you've had? Has it always been like hand-me-downs and bust-ups and rust pots?
Yeah, the first one that I've actually paid some money for. Nalco had her mother gave her a new car, the Rabbit, but she totaled it within a year. So that was the newest car we had owned, I think, collectively. So this is the newest car since
then. Now that you have babes, you're like, I don't want to be responsible for your deaths in my death trap, so I'll buy a nice new car.
Yeah, well, it's not a new car. It's actually a couple of years old, but it was certified or whatever, so. Yeah, it's safer and bigger for
like, certified sexy.
Not that. But yeah, it just got me thinking, like, I just, you know, those cars are just so awesome. Like the memories of driving around in that, you know, and making that movie and stuff with the Chevy Caprice Classic. It's just such a awesome pimp car.
Yeah, I mean, there are those memories that we all, well, I don't know about you, Gabe, but you know, the most typical people have about, like, you know, cars, especially when you're young. And then it becomes this thing when you're at some point, you're not, for everybody, I guess, but for me and probably you, Malcolm, where it's this, I mean, it's not even necessary, but it's sort of like, in a sense, it's like the necessary evil, like, oh, I've got to drive somewhere, or oh, I need a car or whatever. And it loses, at least in my case, it's lost all the allure. Like it just is like, oh my God, I don't have any of that romanticism associated with it. But I still remember, like you're saying, you know, the olden days.
Yeah.
Do you own a car now, Adam?
Yeah, I have a Honda Civic that is basically decaying. It's a 2008, so it's not that old, but it's, you know, eight or 9 years old, and it has like 23,000 miles on it because I never drive it. And they just sort of, they don't do well under that condition because they're not heated up enough to like heat off the water. And, you know, they just sort of rust or something internally.
Yeah. Boston winters.
Yeah. But, yeah, I totally remember that. I had a series of like family hand-me-downs. I remember growing up, my dad bought a Toyota Corona, which is sort of like a higher, they don't import them anymore. I think they're still in Japan, but it was a model that was sort of like above the Corolla. It was sort of like the Camry of the 70s before the Camry was introduced. And it was a wagon, and it was red, and it was a pretty nice looking car. And I knew just based on whatever that was going to be my first like inherited car, you know, when he bought his next one. And then a couple of years before I was to get it, maybe a year or two, someone rear-ended him and crushed the car into like an accordion. And luckily he wasn't badly hurt. He had you know, some cuts and scrapes, but he wasn't badly hurt. But the car was completely totaled. But he really liked that car, so he just went and bought a used one, which was, I was also going to eventually inherit. But instead of like the nice red model, he bought the used one he got, which is otherwise exactly the same, was yellow wood grain. And it was like the most horrible, embarrassing looking vehicle. And those old old Japanese cars especially are, they just were notorious for just rusting completely away. And by the time I got it, it had like big rust holes in it. It was just completely embarrassing. You know, it was almost like your first car that you don't want to be seen in.
If you believe and if you try, you can do anything. You can do miracles, things that seem impossible. You can do miracles, miracles. You can do them. Have faith, you are human, only human, and human beings, they do miracles, miracles, you can do them, have faith.
Well, my first car is my only car. I only had it for 3 months.
Is that the VW?
Yeah, it wasn't even really mine. It was Zach. He just lent it to me to drive around the country in. And now, every time I even want, I have a driver's license. Every time I'm like, Grace, why don't we rent a car and go somewhere? She's like, I don't want to die. That's what she says every time. So I don't even, I feel like I'm never going to get a chance to drive. I listen to you guys talk about cars. I'm like, I wish I had a car. I hate riding my bicycle and walking. My legs hurt.
Well, that's the thing. I don't really drive that much. I mean, we use it to go grocery shopping and when we go to Michigan and stuff, but it's, and now it's like, I'm like, it's just, it's kind of a pain in the ass to have a car, but,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was something that, it was nice when you didn't need a car and still had one, like, especially in New York, there was no one had a car in New York and it was nice to occasionally be like, oh, let's go to the beach and let's go drive up to Boston or something. And it seemed, I don't know.
By the way, I just got to say, Malcolm, you sent me this Toyota Corona website and it's amazing. It's bringing it all back. Basically, near the bottom of that site, there's a picture of a wagon. Unfortunately, it's one of the smaller pictures, but that's exactly.
Oh, those cars are awesome. That's totally like the Datsun. There was I remember a friend had a Datsun.
Oh my God, there it is. I went farther down the page. If you go to the very bottom of that page, like as low as you can go, there's the yellow wood grain.
It's amazing. Like, that car is amazing.
Oh my God, it was so amazing. I was so sad when I had to get rid of it. That's the car I drove with John Kumpf and Joe to Newfoundland. It totally killed the engine.
That is amazing.
Oh yeah, I love that. I loved that car, and it was. It was really nice, man. I wish, but you can't get them. I think they're probably, I don't only mean that, but any old like 70s Japanese import, they're really collectible now because they didn't.
Yeah, well, that's what the guy from the Honda dealers, I was like, look, checking out that Civic that they had.
Yeah, and you're like, and I'll take that one.
And first of all, it was so small, like so much smaller than I remembered. Yeah. Like nowadays, cars are so giant that they dwarf this car. It was like a go-kart. It was so small. But he was like, oh yeah, that's like, you know, crazy collectible car now. You know, it's probably like $500,000 for that car.
I don't know if it's that much, but they are crazy because I guess until the early 90s, there weren't any laws about basically rust proofing the cars. Like now all the metal is galvanized. There's also a lot more plastic, but they dip the metal so that it, before they paint it, so that it has like a permanent rust proofing on it. But pre like 1990, that wasn't the case. And especially the Japanese imports from the 70s, it was like a crappy, they were made out of like crappy soup cans and they were amazing, but they just rusted away. So yeah, they're all gone.
And there were all stick shifts too. I remember, I don't know if that was a stick shift, but all the cars I had and my friends had were all stick shifts. And they were so like fun to drive.
They weren't like performance stick shifts. They just had like a crappy stick coming out.
And it sounded like me. It was like the engine was just like this little buzzing noise.
Yeah, exactly. They were completely unsafe, but everything else, they were very quaint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That was, I still really have fond memories. Your, what was it? You said some muscle car thing. It was a...
Oh, the Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
Supreme.
When we were living in Green Street, I had a Cutlass Supreme, and I bought that car from essentially a semi-homeless guy in Alston for like $120 who had stolen street signs and put them under the rotting floor mat because it was like your cars where there was no floor left. So he had just put like stop signs, no parking signs as like new floor. And, but he did have, it was a legal thing. He had like the papers or whatever. And Jason and I got it. I want to say it's when I was Green Street, but maybe it was earlier. Anyway, we got it and we went to my parents' house and Jason brought his, MIG welder. We got a bunch of sheet metal from like the hardware store or Home Depot or whatever. And welded a floor in. And I remember the crazy thing, which still gives me a little bit of shivers, is we said, you know, let's figure out where the fuel line is before we do this. Because like a MIG welder, an arc welder, would instantly blow up the gas if it hit the fuel line. And we looked for, I don't know, like 2 minutes, you know, on our back under the car, and we're like, yeah, I don't see it. We'll be fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
And we welded the whole floor, and mostly Jason welded it, and I was like hammering and helping, but we welded the whole floor in. And sometime after that, I had to get under the car to do some crappy fake exhaust work, like put a bunch of fake metal under there. So I put the car up on ramps, and I really could see where the weld, you know, where, like, then I just had a lot better view. And we had come within 3/4 of an inch of welding through a completely full fuel line. And the car would have blown, we would have been gone, and it would have been on the news, like huge arc welder explosion. It would have been like, you know, a 70s TV show.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can do miracles. Things that seem impossible. I know a man, he had a plan to manufacture custom-built cars. He had no help. He was by himself. He had no money to get started. But he did a miracle, a miracle. He had faith. You might know him. He lives in Memphis. He manufactures automobile, America.
What was the car you always, like the ugly, like car you had?
Ford Taurus.
You always, you had more than one, right? Or did you have just one?
Well, as a family, we had two. My dad, the other story, which isn't really, I never actually took possession of this car, but after the Toyota, my dad really liked station wagons. That Toyota was the station wagon. And when he got rid of the Toyota, someone said, oh, you should get a Volvo. They were all the rage back in like the early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And he thought it was a good idea because they were super square. And I think I've probably told this story again. I won't go into it, but we actually picked it up in Sweden because you saved a lot on import tax. They had this whole thing where you do like a summer vacation in Sweden. Pick up your... Yeah, it was called tourist delivery. And there's a huge... There was a huge foreign car surcharge, like whatever those taxes, the import-export tax, to bring cars into the U.S. So Volvo came up with this thing that they kind of prearranged for you, where you'd basically purchase a trip to Sweden and vacation in Sweden, and you'd go to the Volvo factory and pick up the car there. And by picking it up in Sweden, they'd avoid having to pay the massive import car tariff, and the difference would pay for your entire Swedish vacation, all the Swedish meatballs you could eat. And then they would ship the car back to the U.S. on a boat, and you would fly back and the car would be ready for you there. So that's what we did. It was a crazy, that was a crazy trip for a variety of reasons. I was fighting with my sister. My parents had to build a suitcase wall in the back seat, so we had our own compartments. And they told me personally, it was the last vacation they'd ever take with me because I was a terrible child.
How old were you?
It was 84, so I was 13, and I was a terrible child. But
that's amazing.
But
so you had that car for a while?
Well, no. So this is the thing. So my dad had these old Michelin snow tires, which he had had on a bunch of cars before that. Apparently, the rims were close enough that they'd fit. And so every winter, he'd retrofit whatever car he had with these snow tires, which the treads never wore out because they were crazy, like super crazy snow tire treads. And we only drove them for a couple, you know, some months out of the year. Mm-hmm. But they were probably like 14-year-old tires. And he put them on that Volvo, and my mom and sister were going on a trip to Maine, and two of the tires exploded on the highway, and it spun around the highway and smashed into the center barrier and then smashed into the...
They both blew out at the same time?
Well, I think probably one blew out, and then they were both... The tires were so old that, like, once the stress of one blowing out and all the spinning, the other one exploded. And they didn't hit any other cars on the freeway. And they landed in the shoulder with like exploded. The car was completely destroyed.
Wow. I'm only laughing because I know that they're both still alive. So
yeah, they're fine. It was totally, they weren't even hurt. And my sister was with her friend and they weren't wearing seat belts. I remember this. And they're like, we'd probably be really hurt if we had been wearing seat belts. But we just flew around the back like rag dolls and everything was fine. They kind of said that. Anyway, I'm almost done. So then somehow the curse of the Ford Taurus happened, where after that, my dad decided he didn't like European cars and he was only buying American wagons. And at that time, the Ford Taurus was the thing and he just kept buying them and they were so embarrassing.
Yeah, my girlfriend in high school had a Ford Taurus, and I think her dad had bought it for her for the like same, it's like sort of the dependable American car.
With the most ugly, oh, so ugly, the like weird magnifying glass bubble shape. But yeah.
America, yeah.
America, they call him Spaceman. They call him Spaceman. America, America, things that seem impossible.
Gabe, I remember that Volkswagen, and I remember trying to help fix it. Yeah. And it was,
well, the one thing I remember is you
wasn't going well.
I just remember you taking it out and you going, "You're gonna die in this thing," and Zach laughing this evil laugh in the back, like, and I was like, "He wants me to die in his car," like that. That's pretty much.
I also remember that you were going, I don't know if it was a test run or the real trip, but I sort of was pace carring you out to the Mass Pike.
Oh, that was the real trip.
You were leaving.
That was the real trip.
You were leaving, and I said, well, you know, we'll make sure, because you really were uncomfortable driving it. I remember you were trying to do driving lessons at night, just like driving around like Jamaica Plain and stuff. And
So was that the first time you had driven at all?
Yeah, I got my driver's license like right before I went on that trip.
And that was the first driver's license you ever had. And you were already, you're probably late 20s?
Yeah, I was 26, 27, yeah. 26, 27.
Hmm. Yeah. But when I pace card you out to the turnpike, the tolls were up and somehow the car stalled, the truck stalled at the toll booth and you couldn't get it started.
Right.
And you kept saying that the car was broken. And I think the toll booth operator was yelling at you just to like learn how to drive a stick shift. I wasn't in the car, but
yeah, it was a terrible. It was very humiliating that whole trip. But yeah. I never forget when I got my driver's license. I remember, like this is like a month before I was supposed to leave or less, a few weeks. And I remember I was did the driving, and at one point. I backed up like 80 feet without looking behind me or something like that. And the guy was like, looking at me like, but he still passed me. And he said, I think when we got back, he's like, you're a pretty nervous guy, huh? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay, passed. I think he thought I had panicked or something. But yeah, that whole trip. I mean, I remember driving, like I remember I was trying to change gears and I was staring at it. And I just drove right off the road at one point. Luckily, we were driving through the desert, so it was just driving through the desert. But I mean, I was.
Have you driven since?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why Grace won't drive with me is because when we went to Pittsburgh, we stayed in Pittsburgh for a week to take care of my grandmother, and I had use of my mother's car, and we went on a road trip. And on the way back, I was going up this ramp to get on the. to get on a bridge, and the sun was setting and it got in my eyes. I turned too quick and hit the curb and we got a flat, and I'm nervous. So I get tense up when I get behind the wheel, but if I never get a chance to go driving, I'm not going to get any better.
Yeah.
So.
So I know I've had this kind of ongoing theme. I'll figure out something more fun like cars, but for now, it's, we've talked a lot about society and the collapse and global warming and all that. But recently, it just seems like this, I've heard all these news articles, which it seems like it's coming to a fever pitch really fast. I mean, you know, I saw this global warming article the other day where apparently even though, you know, humans put huge amounts of carbon into the atmosphere, the last couple of years, it's kind of plateaued. It doesn't mean we've gone down or that it's good, but like we actually have kind of reached what some scientists think is like the peak emissions. Like we're doing as much possible damage as we can, but it's not getting worse every year in terms of how much we're putting out. And yet what they've seen is the amount like of carbon in the atmosphere is skyrocketing immensely still, even though we've kind of flattened our putting out. And the theory I read was that, although they're not totally confirming this yet, it's one of those like, we're hoping this isn't the case, but if it is, we're really screwed. That over time, there are all these basically carbon sponges, like the ocean absorbs a ton. And so we've had this sort of like giant, the earth is like this huge sponge that's been kind of counterbalancing all the pollution we've been putting into the atmosphere by absorbing it. And the running theory is that the sponge is completely filled now. So even though we're not putting in more and more year over year, there's like no space for it. And so now like it's going to skyrocket out of control really quickly. Sorry, Malcolm, you have kids. I should not have this topic. But so there have been all this crazy like dire global warming stuff. And then Stephen Hawking was like, I know I said 1,000 years to get off the earth, but I'm changing that to 100. And then recently I saw that the plague is back in Mexico and there's just so much stuff. I'm like, and you know, all the political stuff, I'm like, it's okay. It's coming. And so I think my two questions or things to discuss, which are really ridiculous, are, do you think the apocalypse, do you think you're going to get to see it? That's just the first general thing. And then relative to that, if you are going to see it, or even if you're not, what would, you know, like dystopian kind of universes are bad to live in for real, but they're kind of fun as like sci-fi or sort of whatever in theory. So I was trying to think of, for me, what would be like my ideal apocalypse scenario? I don't mean like when it's happening, but like what would the world be like? And I sort of came up with a few rough ideas that are super, super rough. I don't like...
Wait, before you say that, maybe you should save yours for last since you've been thinking about it the longest.
Sure, which is like 2 minutes longer than you. But yeah, I mean, the idea, I guess so, the first question is, do you think I'm crazy or do you think it's possible that we'll actually see, not the total apocalypse, but like the significant, like, okay, it's really starting the collapse of modern society. And then just like, would you want a Blade Runner apocalypse or like a desert, like, you know, apocalypse or something else? Those are the
two questions. Gabe should answer this first because he thinks about this, I think, probably like 20
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm assuming that the world is going to end like in 10 years. This is my plan, and I want to be in Greenland. That's what I'm thinking. Like north, but not many people. There's probably a lot of seals there. Then you could just eat the blubber. But I'm not like, it's not like I'm like,
good
this
eating.
Is what I want. This is the apocalypse I want. I'm more like, well, I mean, so Adam, we used to talk about the apocalypse when we were younger and think, oh, how awesome. But that was in the 90s, you know, the apocalypse was all leather and like sexy cars, you know.
The leather apocalypse.
Yeah. But now
you're thinking Mad Max.
Now I'm middle aged and it's not like I don't care about leather anymore. Like or cars, obviously. So I just want to go somewhere where there's not a lot of people and it's a little bit to the north and there's a good amount of food to be gotten. Of the meat variety.
So you're talking about surviving the apocalypse. I mean, you're not talking about like witnessing.
I don't want to witness. Who wants to witness? Like, I mean, really, if you really think about it,
I thought Adam's question.
So apocalypse would be like, so what? Cannibalism? I don't want to witness that. Nuclear holocaust? No, thank you. Plague? No. What are you talking about? Oh yes, please give me that. Yeah. Oh yeah, more.
No. When I was here listening to Adam describe this, I was sort of imagining Adam describing his sort of best, like the most exciting things you could see in the apocalypse, like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
just
like if
crazy.
Apocalypse was Disney,
I mean, I would like to see, yeah. I think it would be awesome to see, like, to see the burning refuse of a city, of an urban landscape. And like, if I was like, if this was like 20 years ago or 30 years ago when I was some young dude with the crazy haircuts I used to have, but now it's like everybody's got them because we're all in gangs, you know, yeah, I could enjoy that.
Just go to Detroit.
Right, Detroit, that's my point. See, that's the thing, is I feel like the apocalypse is just happening at a slow pace. It's like at a geological time, like we're witnessing, we are witnessing the apocalypse now, but we just don't see it because it's not happening like Hollywood Cuts style.
Right. That's a good point, yeah.
A lot of people won't get no supper tonight. A lot of people going to suffer tonight. Cause the battle is getting hotter in this iration. It's Armageddon. A lot of people won't get no justice tonight. So a lot of people going to have to stand up and fight. But remember to praise Jehovah, and Jesus will guide you in this iration. It's all my duty. Yeah.
So what about you, Malcolm? Apocalypse.
Oh,
dream world.
Yeah, I want to feel some sort of retribution. Like, I want to feel like, I don't know. I want to see like people on their cell phones and their cell phones blowing up in their faces, you know? or just sort of stupid, you know, like people who ride around on those weird one-wheeled skateboards, motorized one-wheeled skateboards. I want to see them just like, just go crazy and, you know, suddenly speed off at 100 miles an hour.
That's funny. So you're talking about the opposite of the slow apocalypse. You're saying like everyone's like, hey, let's take another selfie. But this time the phone explodes and then all the like stupid electric skateboards go crazy. And
right. It's like Y2K. I'm not doing it. My pencil doesn't work.
That's pretty good. So for real though, I mean, it's hard. Maybe not for real, but do you think there's some reasonable chance that we will be like, oh crap, it really, like, I admit I'm still drawing some pretty random possibilities here that we'll see something, but do you think it's possible that in our time here that will happen, or it's pretty unlikely? You think we've got some time to go?
I'd rather not place a wager on it. I feel like every time I sort of make a guess on where the world is going, I'm proven wrong, so I'd rather not.
I don't know. I think it's already here, but
well, Gabe, it's not, because you're sitting in your closet.
Slow-mo end, Adam. Slow-mo end. You can't see it because it's happening too slowly. Look back 20 years and compare 20 years to now.
Yeah, he used to not be in a closet. He was in a full-sized room before.
Right. My rooms are slowly shrinking around me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do think, I kind of agree with that, but I also, I do think at some point there are going to be, like, they're always like, right now it's sort of, especially this global warming stuff, it seems like all the scientific community is like, if we just do everything perfectly now for the next, well, in fact, that was another thing that just came out. They're like, we did a calculation, and if everybody's really good in the next 6 years, we can turn this thing around. And if everyone's like, yeah, sure. Like, suddenly we're going
to
make massive change.
I do have to say that as much as I, you know, loathe Republicans, I can sort of understand them kind of being like, you know what, we're not going to fix this, so F it. Let's just rape it until we're dead.
Yeah, that's gave
it. You respect that, or you understand?
I feel like we're not going to fix this.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you never. Malcolm's right that you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, it just keeps getting worse and worse. I mean, I feel like with the climate stuff, with like the ice caps melting and just the weather. I mean, I just think about the extreme weather. And I feel like a lot of the stuff like forest fires are getting so much worse, and they're putting out so much carbon too. I mean, it's like, so you don't have the reflective surface of the ice. You have the forest fires are more extreme that are putting out all this carbon. I mean, it's more and more not even human created. We created the start of the end, but now that chain of events is already underway.
I say, but remember the praise Jehovah, and he will guide you in the mighty.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I just want to talk about my future. Not that it's too exciting, but I don't, you know, there are a lot of, we could rant on forever about the end is coming. I think I hope for a green apocalypse. Like, I want, there's going to be a time with dryness and fires, but I hope that the earth kind of returns quickly to, you know, an Amazon jungle kind of thing, where you're climbing around looking for lemurs to eat, hiding in caves.
I mean,
fighting,
I think that's
bears.
The best case scenario. Worst case scenario, we turn into Venus.
Yeah, I don't know anything about astronomy. What's Venus like?
Venus is like? Very, very hot. It's too hot for water.
Yeah, that's a. I don't know if that's a global warming thing or just I'm getting older and so I notice it more. But the hot days are really hot. Like I'll go outside and I'll be like, oh my God, I just can't. The sun is just torturing me.
I don't know if that's global warming. I mean, I imagine there is global warming in there, but I think it's just us, also us getting old.
And yeah, yeah, I think so.
Not being able to tolerate weather anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so over weather.
Yeah, I just want some trees to hide under. And I do think, you know, I go camping and I get, you know, I'm scared of the, I went on a hike last weekend and I sang and whistled for the whole hike because I wanted to warn the bears that I was coming so I didn't startle them and make them eat me.
A lot of people won't get no supper tonight. A lot of people going to suffer tonight.
So I'm not gonna last. Like I'm clearly I'm clearly like that City Slickers movie.
Yeah, but you might last through some huckster, you know, can-do spirit walking around whistling.
I thought you were gonna say like it's a sign of the apocalypse that I'm singing while I game. When Adam starts singing while he's hiking, that's a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah, I wasn't really singing, sure. But I was talking and I was whistling a lot because and then when I got done, I was like, wow, I'm just an idiot. But but I was seriously doing it. I thought maybe that's why the people from the old country that we see in movies did that. You know, they walked around and made a lot of noise. They were like, you know, always singing and...
Well, you know, okay, whatever. If there was an apocalypse I would like to see, it would be like intelligent fungus apocalypse where we all have like these strange growths growing out of our eyes. You know, like something really psychedelic and freakish. If we're really talking like choose your own adventure, I can choose anything. I don't think that's going to happen, but hey, it would be interesting.
Maybe that's the thing, like there's some disease like the plague, but if you have learned the secret that if you sort of find the right fungus in the forest and plant it on yourself, like you're describing, and let it grow and symbiotically, then that you will be protected. So it's like the fungus people are the ones that survive and you have to walk around carrying this fungus.
Or like
you.
A singularity apocalypse where the internet becomes smart and takes over the world.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that.
I feel like the apocalypse I'd want to see is like what you were talking about, a sort of kind of a combination of what I was talking about, everyone's cell phones exploding, and your idea of it being green, in that it would be great if just technology just died and just to see what would happen to the world if we had to return to, you know, no technology. It's kind of like, this is some stupid TV show that was on a year or two ago where all the electricity went out or something and everyone had to survive without electricity.
Yeah.
It's really dumb. I didn't watch it, but you know, I like that idea of returning to nature and trying to relearn all those skills that we've lost.
So a lot of people going to have to stand up and
right. And I mean, the population will clearly thin out because that's one of the things. I mean, you know, if you return to nature, you end up being like nomadic and whatever. There's no way to sustain like the crazy agricultural insanity that we've put together. But wait, it's gone in my mind. My mind is getting a lot more forgetful.
Maybe we should move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
All right, so it's my turn. Yeah, so I this is just a thought I had. Actually, I was talking to you, Malcolm, a few weeks ago, and it really occurred to me because I never was very comfortable with email because I always felt like every once in a while I'd write an email and someone would just stop talking to me and I had no idea why. And later I realized that it's because there's no intonation in email. So you would say something like, ha, 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 in your mind. This is pre-emoji, you know. And the other person would be like, oh, ah, like that. So, but what I've noticed is the world has become so sincere and I feel like no one can take a joke. There's no, or the jokes are really so over the top and extreme and annoyingly just obvious, you know, like. Part of it is also living in the Trump era. I mean, half the jokes are like, oh, his small hands. But I just feel like the internet and the world we live in is destroying sarcasm and subtlety in comedy. And that's really, it's just that thought. That's it. That's my whole thought. So I wanted to throw that out there and get the response from you dudes, you two dudes.
When I'm at work, I'm generally... a lot of time I'm writing messages, Facebook messages to my wife, and we're just basically that's, I feel like at this point in our lives, like more than half of our conversations occur via texting and the internet, you know, Facebook messaging. So there's been so many times where that has happened, where I meant something as a joke, she meant something as a joke, or something is right. Completely misunderstood.
What if I peed on your face? It's not funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that did not go over well.
I think it's interesting about this that it seems like a lot of people, because I find this as well, I really, really don't like texting or any of that stuff. I do it, but I try to keep it to a minimum. But I work at a company where we have a bunch of different offices. But obviously we all have desks, we all have phones and whatever. And for me, it's much easier to talk to someone on the phone for 5 minutes than have this, you know, text message or whatever it's called, you know, some kind of messaging system, chat conversation. But for some reason, people seem really reluctant. They don't want to talk on the phone. They'd rather like struggle trying to communicate with lack of subtlety through some messaging platform endlessly than just actually talk. So I agree with what you're saying, but I also think for some reason there's this lack of, like, people don't want to talk directly anymore.
That's true too. I mean, that's a different subject, but I think that there might be a fear of, that, because when you are talking, when you are texting and writing messages, you have that ability to edit yourself, go back, read it, you know, there might be that fear of speaking out loud that people have, that they, you know, the fear of not being understood when you're speaking out loud or being misunderstood is greater than being misunderstood in texts. Which is interesting when you're saying that you feel like you're being misunderstood in text.
Yeah. I mean, I spend, well, you said it too. I mean, I spend a lot of time, I mean, not mostly in texts. I just throw out whatever and then get misunderstood, but in emails and stuff, I'm always looking at them. I know email, no one does email anymore, but you know, at work, like I'm always looking at them and rereading them like 10 times. And then I send it. Inevitably I look at it. I'm not talking about grammatical
mistakes. It's emotional.
I'm just like, the tone right. was wrong or right. something like, oh, mm-hmm. they're going to interpret that as like I was angry right. when I was not right. or whatever.
Yeah. And then you're like, I'm like, I have to put an emoji or some, you know, little thing to say that I'm joking. And then I feel like just an ass.
Yes. You know, like, I can't do it.
Yeah. So I just take out the joke. I'm like, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's true. I feel like at other old jobs before all this texting and stuff, people who I didn't know very well, could, but talked to me more than texted with me or emailed with me, knew that I was not a serious person and could tell I was a, you know, I was a sarcastic and ironic a lot of the times. But now the younger people I work with, they, I think they all think I'm this cranky old guy who has no sense of humor.
All true.
Cause I don't joke in any emails. I'm very, like, I just very straight matter to yeah. matter of fact, very straightforward in all my,
and,
all my
and, correspondence. And the other side of that too, is these memes. Like, I'll get these memes and people will be like, and there'll be comments like, oh, that was so funny. I pissed myself laughing or something. I don't know why I'm pee obsessed today. I don't know what it is, but I don't find these memes funny. Like, I'm like, what? I'm not laughing. I mean, there's a little chuckle somewhere in the rear seating compartment of my brain somewhere, but like, I'm not, it's not reaching my mouth. It's not that funny enough to get out of my mouth. You know what I mean? It's you know what I'm saying? Like, the funniness is not there. Stop.
LOL is bullshit. Like the idea of someone writing LOL is just ridiculous. Like, it doesn't make any, it doesn't, it's just so dumb. The
out
idea
loud.
Of someone laughing, you know, like having to express to you
I
like
am
that,
laughing
I thought that
out
was
loud
funny.
Now.
Yeah. It's like, you don't need to do that.
Just laugh out loud.
It's yeah,
we're our generation is done for. I'm just saying. I will say, this just occurred to me though. There is one friend of mine at work where we have a similar sense of humor, and he works in a different office, and we actually often have a chat window open, and we actually have chosen at this point, it's a personal account, because we say, I mean, it's just like this running, often completely wrong kind of banter that where, you know, the sarcasm is understood because
yeah.
we're really comfortable. That's why I'm actually surprised, Malcolm, that you say you and Nalco don't like misunderstand each other over that, because I would assume that you guys really have.
Well, we do. We. I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's an endless amount of cynicism and and sarcasm and stuff between us as we're writing to each other. So, but it does. Yeah, there's like
right.
It depends on our moods. You know, I'm trying to think of an example where that happened. Recently, there was one moment where I like was sincerely questioning something she had said, and she thought I was being sarcastic. So it was
right.
I guess it's the opposite.
Yeah, but I mean that happens. That happens.
That's the danger in all of that.
In your regular life too. I mean, just talking with your loved one.
Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
So for example, Grace is taken to calling me a movable cube. That's her new nickname for me, because she's shaped like a cube, but I move.
So you're like a piece of furniture now? Oh, movable cube, will you move so that I can put my feet up
on
you? And
it's funny, but sometimes
cube.
I get upset. I'm like, Grace, I ate nothing but fruit today, and I went for a 2-mile run, and you're calling me a cube. You know, like, it depends. Sometimes I get a little bit sensitive.
That's pretty good.
I've become, you know.
Please, please.
So do you guys think, I've always felt that despite the fact that these technologies, be it texting or instant messaging, have caught on and are used so more and more heavily, I mean, there are a lot of popular in the tech world tools like Slack and other things that are like the way that you talk to your, you know, your coworkers. But it seems to me that they're the Model T of communication, even though they're the latest thing. Does this feel really like we're at the beginning or the end? Meaning, like, is text messaging and instant messaging like what we all aimed for, or we just haven't figured out virtual reality yet, where we'll all be floating in some weird, like, fish tank?
Well, that gets back down to the choose your own adventure apocalypse, Adam. I mean, it depends on whether we're going green or we're going with the singularity here. You know what I mean?
I guess so.
I don't know if I know one way or the other, but I like the idea that it is the Model T, because it's right now it feels like there's just too many. I mean, obviously this is, I think everyone feels this, but there's just too many ways to communicate, and it's just messy. You know, I feel like it's all just so messy. Like, there's like,
yeah.
And they're all existing online. Like, there's just all these conversations I'm having with people on all these different formats and whatever, and they just sort of exist online in all these places, and it's weird.
Yeah, and at work, there are different groups like different messaging tools, so I end up having roughly the same concept of some kind of like text messaging, instant messaging platform, but I've got like four of them open. You know, yeah. I'm using like Hangouts and Skype and Slack, and then maybe a few others all at the same time. And I'm like, what's good? And then emails in the background. And I'm sort of like, why does this all exist? It's just the same thing with like slightly different tweaks.
I was going to say, it's just because no one wants to say no, you know, everyone wants to get on the new thing. So, like, there's all these old people that I work with that refuse to get on Slack or any of the other things, and they'll just communicate by email, which is fine, but everyone else, the younger people, want to be on Slack.
Right.
So we have to be on Slack as well. Plus there's like Asana, this, you know, project management thing that also has messaging within it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's like, yeah, there's too many things. It's really frustrating.
Going back to chopping out letters on a stone tablet, handing those around.
I'll be done in a minute. Ding, ding, ding,
but back to the idea of sarcasm, sarcasm on the internet. Did you hear about the that was a totally different thing, but the Ten Commandments sculpture
that
someone just ran into?
I did.
I didn't. Oh, someone crashed into it or something?
It was like a day after they put it up, someone like just smashed into it. But it's so great to hear that. back to the idea of sarcasm in the digital age. It's also in humor in general on Facebook and stuff. There's a lack of any kind of sarcasm or anything that's, everything is very sincere, which is frustrating at times. It's like people I know who, when I speak to them, are really funny, really sarcastic. Not that sarcastic is the best form of humor anyway, to begin with, but, you know, I think anyone who is a funny person will have some sarcasm occasionally. But just in general, they're very, their sense of humor is black at times and dark. But whatever they post on the internet is always very sincere. It'll be about how much they love their wife or whatever on their birthday, or their, you know, how much they love their dad on Father's Day. And it's rare that you see their actual sense of humor. And they're people that I haven't seen in many years. So I wonder if maybe they've just changed, but I get the impression that maybe they haven't. That's just how they communicate.
Well, I do think, and this is something, there's this whole, obviously this whole PC thing that people talk about and either say it's great or complain about. I complain about it, but I think that most kind of things, and you know, comedians talk about this, but there's so much context around what you say, you know, especially in humor. And one of the things about message-based formats is that all that context is lost. You don't know who's really saying it. You don't have the tone of the voice. You don't have any of sort of the background of whatever. So then you just have to judge it on the pure, like, positive, right, negative merits. There's no way of somebody making a joke where they're like, oh, this is a, you know, if you knew me and I could, and you kind of had a sense of how I was saying it, it would be funny, as opposed to maybe to some people like offensive or bothersome. And you can't really draw that line. There's always, and your audience is sort of infinite online. I mean, I suppose not in messaging platforms, but it's sort of like on Facebook, essentially. I mean, I know their privacy settings and everything, but you know, huge numbers of people can see what you write. So everything just becomes like a weird Orwellian. It's sort of like Big Brother. That's not Big Brother. That's right. Everybody, where you have to be perfect because everyone's going to be looking and being like, oh, you said something bad. And you're like, no, you know, but so that's, you know.
Yeah. It kind of whitewashes everything and it all becomes safe and, not fun.
I mean, I worry about that just in general with online content. I mean, like the stuff that we put up on the website, you know, I'm like, I'm applying for a job. What if somebody, my email address is attached to this website? What if somebody goes, looks at that and then
thinks you're a pervert,
not to hire me for
what? Yeah.
They'd be right.
Gabe's a pervert. No, it's true. It's true. And
I mean, our whole life is on the internet. Like I teach children. So like if any parent like happens to be like, oh, mutable sound, I wonder what that's all about. Let me go look at it.
Right. Yeah, well, I wonder about like our children's record that we recorded. Like, it was so clearly clearly satire to us.
To us.
Nowadays, who knows? People might think that's a sincere children's record.
I mean,
yeah.
I do think there. This doesn't really impact or change what we've been talking about, but from that personal level, I do think I do have respect for people that. There's some comedians that just have gotten to the point where they just say, I mean, it's not like they're saying super offensive stuff, but stuff that you would find funny. They're just saying it. They're not worrying about it so much. And I think with the pervasiveness of like internet culture, we have to get to that point individually, you know, where you have to sort of have some level of, I don't know what to call it, like guts or self-belief, because it's impossible. Yeah. Like if you can be totally hide out and not put anything up or try to be perfect, but it's just such BS.
Mutable.